The four children of Horus are at the center of our table. They're these little figures here. These are the four children of Horus. So this is the little jackal-headed god Tuamatef, or Duamatef. I'm going to write it. I'll write the spellings on the board, so don't worry. We don't know. Lost in the midst of time. Well, actually, in fact, actually, each one of the goddesses named. See, because he's the father, and they, I suppose, actually, they are the mother. Thinking about it, so he would have had congress here with the goddess Neet, who is the weaver goddess, who weaves the gods into being. And here we have Imseti, who is the human-headed god of the south. His mother is Isis. Here we have the god of the west, which is called Kebsenuf. I'll write the names. It's a little hawk-headed god. And his mother is Serket, the scorpion goddess. And finally, we have sadly a rather bad depiction of a baboon. It looks more like a little mouse, really. But anyway, this is Happy, the baboon, who is found in the north, called the Ape of Thoth, in Egyptian folklore, the baboons, in the morning, the baboons praise the coming of Ra, because if you ever had time in South Africa once for a long time, so sit on a mountain and watch the baboons, and they do this, because they're warming themselves, because they're cold, you know, they're warming themselves up against the morning sun. But to the Egyptians, that was, they are praising the rising of Ra in the eastern horizon. So they may well be doing that in their own way. So they're waiting in the darkness for the rising of the sun. And these very ancient forms, the archangels are come out of Judeo-Christian tradition, but these are some of the earlier forms. As you know something about Judeo-Christian tradition, they have this thing called the four holy living creatures. And one of the mysterious ones that we can never understand is in the West, you have this figure of a white eagle, which doesn't make sense. The West is a place of water. So why would you have a white eagle in the West? Now, the original form of this figure is Kebsenuf, who is the white eagle, the white hawk, who protects the dead on the western bank. So the four holy living creatures in Christian and Judaic tradition, one's got a man's face, one's got an eagle's face, one's a bull, and one's a lion. Now, these are derivations thousands of years later on of these four great figures, and the baboon and the jackal have kind of got lost because they are not really found in Europe, so other things have taken their place. But this is the original, again, because we're looking at origins here. These are the original forms of the archangels. So if you were an Egyptian magician, these are the figures that you would invite to protect you in the four directions of space. And they're rather cute, actually. I quite like having them here with us. But the other thing that's interesting in Egyptian, because of course one of the problems of Judeo-Christian tradition is the dominance of patriarchal imagery, inevitably, because of the development of patriarchy in the West. Now, the other figures that you find guarding the quarters in these very old Egyptian traditions are the goddesses. So you have this ring of goddesses. You have Neet, the weaver goddess, who creates even the gods. You have Isis, who is the great teacher of magic and transformation and compassion. Serket is the serpent goddess, scorpion goddess rather, and she protects, the West is a place of purification and cleansing, and she protects against toxicity and serpent bite and scorpion bite. So she cleanses toxicity. Whereas in the north here we have the goddess Nephthys, who is the sort of the sister of Isis. And whereas Isis, in a sense, is the goddess of light, she is the goddess of darkness, equally needed. So they balance each other. So you see in these very old forms, you can just see a sort of a different way of looking at the world, really, which kind of in some ways we've forgotten. And it's not that we have to be Egyptian. I mean, the thing of trouble with using things like Egyptian imagery is, and the mistake that is often made, is instead of using the methods and the images to develop our own creativity, people dress up as Egyptians. And that's not wrong, I don't think, but it misses the point. You know, the point is to look at where the ancient Egyptians can help us, is their understanding of things like embodiment and the deep imagination and working with that. So we don't want to dress up as Egyptians. Nothing wrong with dressing up as Egyptian, but that's not what we're doing here. We're looking at their core methods in some ways. And as this weekend goes on, you'll see how this is translated into these images of the Tarot and the Tree of Life, which is, you know, which can look like a long way away from the actual from these. If we look at the Tarot and the Tree of Life, and you know what you've got there are images of angels. You've got Hebrew letters. We've got the Tarot images, and it can be hard sometimes to see what's the connection between that and this Egyptian traditions that I'm talking about. Yet in their essence, there's a very clear line through. But all of the methods, of course, all the ideas are provisional, because the main point really is to enable you to listen to your body, listen to your imagination, to find the deeper will within yourself and cooperate with that. That's the whole point of everything we're doing in some ways. So from that point of view, all the forms are just at the service of that. What was the experience of looking at the scroll like? In that little quick flash meditation.
It reminded me of that.
Ah, that's interesting.
And the bin bird, possibly.
Ah, nice, interesting.
And in a sense, that feeling that the hairs sort of can be created, and that sort of, whereas. Because you can either go up the tree
at the
sides, or you can go.
Yeah, nice. Any other experiences with that image of the scroll, which opening the scroll a little bit?
I'm hitting my usual thing of not being able to do it.
Okay, tell me about that then, Jenny. So what's happening?
In the previous one where we met the magician. It was just lovely because there I was behind him and I was just sailing through into the water. It was effortless and out again. And then I hit the place where I couldn't see anymore, couldn't experience anymore. So I heard what you said about just stay with that.
Yeah.
And then I hit that place immediately again with this.
Yep.
So then I went to my body.
Yeah, good.
And there's a deep sense of something very that I can hardly move from. So I'm still with I can't do that, but there's something going on in the body.
Good. So that's what was in the scroll. What was in your scroll is that sense.
Oh, right.
Right. That's what I mean. That's what I mean about trusting experience here, right?
Yes.
So you open the scroll, you hit the block, and then you find some deep sense in your body that you don't yet understand.
Okay.
Right? So that's what was on your scroll. That's what I mean about really trusting the experience.
Yes.
Okay, rather than thinking, oh, I can't do this, and I'm doing it wrong. Actually, that's very powerful. So there's something quite powerful going on there. Okay? And it's mysterious. I can't feel what it is, really. It feels deep down.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Yes.
Good. So stay with that. Trust that. I think it's hard. Trusting these experiences are really hard, because they're living experiences. They're often quite unexpected, and they don't conform to our own sense of the rules of ourselves or the rules of life. Right. So there's something about the challenge of trying to trust something that happens, even though it might seem like nothing has happened. So whenever you think nothing has happened, great, nothing has happened, but get interested in the particularity of that nothing. There's always something happening.
There's a quote from Samuel Beckett, I think it is, which goes something along the lines of fail again, fail better.
Mm.
And that's the thing for me.
Yeah, totally.
That's the lesson, that's the learning.
Yeah.
That's what you meditate on.
Yeah.
Because that experience is where you're, that's what's going to happen for you.
Yeah, and something is going on in that's important. And the problem with the problem with I can't do it, that thought, I can't do it, I get it wrong again, is the energy dissipates, you dissipate, you fall away from your own experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, and there's no way to get this wrong. Because even if you do that, you'll eventually come back to yourself somehow. You know, in the end, you can't escape yourself. You can't escape the experience, but it just works a little better if you try and resist that thought and stay with the actual experience, rather than the thought of "I can't do it," which is a defensive reaction to the experience. Always, "I can't do it," when it happens in that particular way, is a defensive reaction to something that's happening.
I was getting this, so I can read your sentence to breathing, it seems much more important, and I can see in the scroke something to do with H and things, like horse, happy, upset, hematite. And I just only realised H is to do with breathing as well. Yes, it is, hey. It's about breathing.
Yeah, completely. No, so that's right. Exactly. So that's the point, isn't it? And that's an interesting little loop, because you're with the breathing, and then you go into looking, and then you see a letter that reminds you about breathing, so it takes you back to the point.
Say something.
Yeah.
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 I've got rather a fondness for scrolls. I write on giant ones when I do pieces of work.
Yeah.
I kind of roll them out.
Yeah, great.
People who are buying the work. And then I don't know what to do with them afterwards. So they normally last for a year, these giant scrolls. And then I've got like piles of them. Then I was thinking about the modern day scrolling. We scroll.
No, that's absolutely right.
It's kind of interesting.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember what the parrots do. You know parrots? Have you ever looked at a parrot and it does something with its leg like this while it's looking at you? And that's, is that scrolling or scrying?
Scrolling, I think that is.
Is that scrolling as well?
Yeah.
There's lots of different scrolls, isn't there?
It's interesting, yeah.
I just wonder what the kind of... I don't know what was more on mine, because I suppose I use them, so I couldn't imagine. I just know what I write on these things.
Mm-hmm. So in that moment, you're reminded of, or you see yourself writing on a scroll.
Yeah, which I do a lot of.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Hard when it's literal to use the imagination.
I think you are using the imagination. The imagination is taking you into that literal process of you working, right? So it's taking you right there. So I don't know why it's doing that, but that's what it's doing. That is the imaginative process.
I have started to give them away, so I kind of write them more gives them to the person I'm working with, and they seem to then have to responsibility to find somewhere to put it. I don't
know. You don't have to do that.
No. I found that they become very visual. They used to be very written, and now they're very visual. So they're like a huge piece of art.
Yeah, great.
I quite like that.
I like that too, that's nice.
I'm not really sure what I should do with my images that come up. I don't know what, they're just there. I don't really know, but they're just there. Like the chair's there.
Yeah, so the images are there.
So I and particularly this breath meditation, I didn't have a particular this is what this means to me. It was just there it is. Oh yeah, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I am with it, I guess.
How do you feel about that?
It's strange because these things happen and I guess I get to a place where. You know, I can go into different things, or you know, these, you know, meditations can go on, and that the those things can come up.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to get complacent about this. In a funny sense, kind of would like to.
So with the scroll thing, what came up? What was the image that came
so
up?
So it came up this morning, which is the scarab, and then in this one, and then breathing that back into the room.
Yeah.
Just came into a scarab beetle, a big blue one that's about the size of a football, trotting around the room.
So if you pay attention to that scarab beetle, what happens?
I guess I just, it, because it was so instant, I didn't have time to interact with it anymore, have a conversation, which I guess is the next bit.
Yeah, that's right.
Because that's where I am.
So if you start the conversation with it, what happens?
I guess I'm slightly aware I don't really like spiders. And you know, there's a insect likeness of this.
Yeah, it's a beetle.
Insect.
It's a beetle, yeah.
So there's a bit of me that goes a little bit, goes yikes, but it's actually very beautiful. It would take me a little while to have a conversation.
No, I know it would, yeah. But that's the point, right? So suddenly that scarab beetle has just appeared really for you, okay?
Yeah.
And as you start to talk to it, you'll start to relate to it. It'll start to relate to you. I mean, it's interesting, really, because in Egypt, the scarab beetle is the image of creativity and life energy, because it carries the sun into the new morning. So
yeah,
it's
appeared in different meditations when I've come here.
Yes. Great.
I have already a place with here it is again. So.
Yeah. Great. So that's good. So there's something about, it's not about being complacent or anything. I think it's just accepting that happens. And it happens quite easily. Partly because you have an ability with these things. Okay. It is part of you. You know, you do a lot of inner work. And so there's something about, okay, great, here it is. So you'll travel with it, and it'll travel with you in some way. Thing about images, and in the way that we're looking at them, is they are these living forms. Right? One of the problems with interpretation of images is they kill the living form. This means that. That means that. Once you create an image becoming, you say, oh, this means that, and then your mind short-circuits it, because actually images are always mysterious, because they're alive. They're their own little living trees in their own way. And so what you have to do is to relate to it and watch it relate back to you. And just see what happens, really.
Because I from just talking to you about, because my kind of concern about coming to do the stuff about the Egyptology is it had a real visceral kind of sense of, oh, I had a yuck kind of feeling to it. So the work this morning and then the work now, I feel quite comfortable with that. That feels okay. And
good,
I
good.
Understand that, you know, that the images or whatever they are, Egyptian or wherever they come from, are just relational pieces, really. It doesn't really matter where.
No, it doesn't matter where they come from.
Where they come from.
No, totally. Yeah. Good.
I just wanted to say, I don't know, I had a kind of, was going in to open up the scroll.
Yeah.
What happened was, all I was aware of was that immediately I could go with the breath. But then, and it was very fast.
Yeah.
Got very fast.
Those
strong,
are yeah.
And that was good.
Yeah.
But I opened up the scroll, and what I saw there was black writing. Not huge, but that. Beware. And so then, God. And coming out of it, I was wondering, well, I'm not that visual. I am and I'm not. I'm sensory.
Yeah.
That was really kind of black and white almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Beware, but that does beware mean be really beware because danger's coming? Or was it then again, I was thinking, what was the second thought that was coming? Because this was thought rather than sensation. Then it was be aware.
Yeah, could be that as well. Yeah.
But it was almost like a warning as well. It was a quality of warning, you know, or maybe warning. I don't know why. It just didn't.
So I think there's something. I think that's right. I think there is a puzzle because there's an ambiguity there. Is there? Is it a danger, or does it mean wake up or be aware? And so there's something about staying with that confusion, staying with that ambiguity, and kind of in letting it inform your experience. Really, that's quite important. So we don't know. Is it be aware? It's powerful because it, you know, it happened kind of immediately, and that's an unusual experience. So that's. There's something important in that then to stay with. Yeah.
When I opened mine, I saw lots of squiggles and I thought, I can't understand this. And then I saw tarot, but T-A-R-O.
Yeah.
Without a T. I thought, I've seen that somewhere before. Where have I seen that? And I thought it was on that card, but that's Torah.
No, it's on the Wheel of Life card.
Ah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It'll be on.
Yeah.
Be on here, I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes, it is now. You say that, I remember. But then I was thinking, well, it does sound like tarot without the T, and then
Well, it means in the card. It means it's from the Latin rotas, rota, which means wheel. Well, yeah, it is. It's here. Yeah, it's on this card. On the card, Wheel of Life card. So it's rota, which means wheel.
Is it possible that that's a message, another message?
Yeah, well,
that card is really significant.
Yeah, it is exactly that. So it's pointing to that, right? So tarot rota, it would take me to that card, given the context that we're looking at it in. And to that again, and to the image of the wheel.
The winged creatures.
And the fourly winged creatures are there in the same way that, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's the
wheel. Yeah.
Like that.
And so the. Yeah. It's all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I didn't say before we began today, but I'm having a very extraordinarily difficult time at home and and in relationship. And. It's sort of like the death sentence, and the scroll came up with very sort of old English or Gothic style writing, but I couldn't read it at first.
Mm-hmm.
And then it had till death us do part.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Which is quite sort of powerful.
That's powerful.
And then I had a sense of like the tomb doors, reading it inside the pyramid, and then everything closing down and being dark.
Yeah.
Going dark, so all the doors shutting the tomb. And a sense of that. The jackal figure moving around in the darkness, and sort of alarming and not alarming. So, that's what it's sort of taken me to.
Yeah, a jackal figure is normally a guide in those circumstances.
Oh.
He's normally a guiding figure. So he opens the way. He's often called the opener of the way, the one who opens the way for them,
right.
Particularly in places, in an impossible place, exactly. So that's quite, significant.
Is Anubis in another form?
Yes, it is. Yes, it's. There's a relationship between Dumatov as a Egyptian imagery is layered on layer because it's such an ancient. It's a 5,000-year-old civilization. So Dumatov is connected to Anubis, the jackal-headed god, the guide. Andy, you want to say something?
Yes, I want to say. I noticed I got stuck on the. I don't know how to work with this.
Yeah, go on.
Is that open the scroll? So, well, like Jenny, I will. My way is freeze. I've got to find something else.
Yeah.
So that was it. Okay, so I got through that gate.
Okay.
And I opened it up, and there's writing there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in foreign.
Yeah.
I don't know, Middle Eastern religion or something like that.
Yeah.
That sort of writing. I don't know what the religion has got in there, but anyway.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, I don't know what to do with that. But I feel, and then I feel stuck. And I don't know how to How do I work with that? Because I can't.
How did the language look? You can't understand the language. How did it look? Was it attractive, unattractive? What's the quality of the letters?
They're very beautiful, those. What do they call scripts?
Yeah.
You know, those beautiful scripts that you can see in. Yes, beautiful script. Beautifully written.
Good.
Probably from left to right, or I don't know if it was right to left. I just didn't know what to do with that. Right.
Okay, so there's something there, but not being able to understand, right? So, and so if you don't freeze there, then you can look at the script and see its beauty and mystery, but also see the beauty of it.
Yes, that's a good thought.
Okay, so that's.
And then I feel much more fluid.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel more dancing with it.
Yeah, totally. That's it.
And it's dancing across the page.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So you see, then it starts then to come to life. It starts to move. Yeah, that's really important. Mm-hmm.
Then I won't take off.
Yeah, exactly. Which is another edge.
Okay. Really
that's good. Yeah. Good.
Seems to be something of a theme of being finding contentment with the bodily experience and not worrying about assigning any meaning to it.
Yeah, it's letting meaning arise out of experience rather than trying to preempt experience by insisting on meaning. I mean, I think that's often what we do, right? We insist on creating meaning and therefore we stop experience. Rather than trust whatever is the arising experience and trusting that at some point meaning will arise. But not if we prematurely impose meaning, we stop the flow. We actually freeze. I mean, that's why it's great even using these words freeze, because that's exactly what happens. Our system stops. And our experience stops. So we just take a breath and just soften again and come back to the experience. It then starts to move.
So I found with my scroll.
Yeah.
It was blank. It hadn't got anything on it.
Yeah.
And it's the thing of admiring the nothingness that's there.
Definitely, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And it relates to that experience of writing, because I have to keep relearning this thing that if I wait for the inspiration, it will happen.
Mm.
You know, I can't jog it along.
Yeah.
Hurry up.
Yeah.
It's time. Just got to wait, and then when I'm least expecting it, it will happen.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I don't need to do anything really. I just need to hurry up and write it all down.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Still flowing.
Yeah.
But it's a terribly hard lesson to learn, because every time I get anxious, but I'm never going to write again.
Yeah, that's right. No,
that's the end of it.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of, admiring the blankness. It's waiting for me. Waiting for something to happen.
I think it's interesting in that moment as well, because sometimes that anxiety is part of the creative tension of something arising.
Yeah.
And if we can recognize that it is that creative tension, we can relax into it. I often think that movement, that which I'm very familiar with myself, that of God, nothing's ever going to happen again. And actually, I think it's caused by the energy arising out of the nothingness, which we're misunderstanding. I think it's interesting. Mm.
Is that Alan Bennett? John says, when he finishes the work, did you see this interview? He says, he never knows he's ever going to write again.
Yeah,
same. Maybe years. And maybe never happen.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Well, it is true, because in any creative act, you go back to that place of origination. In a way, you do come back to those places of the deep waters where nothing is going on, and and you have to be at the service of that. And so literally in that moment, you don't know if you're ever going to write again. You're in that unknown, mysterious place.
Like a hibernation.
Yeah, kind of like that, yeah. Listening.
Yes, I think Alan Bennett talks about that writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
sort of don't worry about it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you never write again.
Yeah.
You have written.
Mm.
And something may come, something may not. So, wait for it.
Mm.
Watch the space.
So if you ever do meditations where you kind of hold the space,